Hi, so my name is Homer Venners. I'm the medical director of Rikers Island for the Department of Health of New York City. And I'm also a faculty member at NYU Center for Health and Human Rights. So I wanted to talk today a little bit about the genealogy of HIV testing, but I will put a special emphasis on trends in primary care, because it is actually what's changed the most about HIV testing, or what we're trying to change the most, is to bring it in line with what we're also trying to do in the community, which is to make knowing your HIV status and getting tested part of your regular chronic care encounters. So what we want is for people in the community, when they see their doctor or their nurse or whoever about diabetes, about asthma, about COPD, we want those providers to be checking in with patients about, do you know your HIV status? And so I think that this effort is something that we're very much engaged in at Rikers Island, which is a jail, but it's a struggle, and it's a struggle with our providers in many of the same ways as a struggle with the providers that you all work with in the community. So I don't have any relationships to disclose. This is a picture of Rikers. Rikers Island is a jail. I think most people, you know, are familiar with the difference between jail and prison, but people are there either waiting trial or they may have been sentenced to less than a year. So our system's quite big. It's the second biggest in the country, so there's about 13,000 people at any one time. What you see here is the island, which has 9 facilities on it. Then there are 2 jails off the island. One is a barge that floats off of Hunts Point in the Bronx, and the other is Manhattan House, which is a jail in Manhattan. So I'll skip over this, but basically, you know, jail, as you would imagine, because of how you get there, people are there for short periods of time. So our average stay is, you know, somewhere around a month. We have people that are there for somewhat longer, and we have a lot of people who leave very quickly, and this really informs what we do from a medical standpoint. So the bottom item there, so the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, who I work for, we oversee the medical care for this whole population. And so unlike most correctional settings, you could probably go to almost any other jail in the country, or certainly any prison, and the people who provide the care, their boss's boss is a correctional person, is the sheriff, or is the commissioner of corrections. So we in New York and a couple other municipalities around the country have a different system, which is that, you know, my boss's boss is the commissioner of health. And so that's built into the charter of New York City, which is like our constitution. So the theory is that we are an independent health authority. There's an upside to that, which is, you know, we're health people. The downside is that we are the tenants and the Department of Corrections, who runs that whole big thing I showed you. They're the landlords, and so it very much informs our interactions. So as you would guess, HIV is more prevalent in correctional settings. What I will show you that it really informs our testing is that we have done along the way these things called sero surveys, which is when people come into our setting, the way we do a sero survey is we collect everybody's blood to check for syphilis. We do an RPR test. And so we then, every, you know, 4 or 5 years, have done a sero survey where we just take all the RPR tubes and de-identify and check for HIV. And so that's a sero survey. What that does is it tells us, you know, what is the prevalence or what's the positivity rate for people coming in, and we can compare that to the community. And so, but it's no surprise that, you know, you have more HIV positive people in jail and in prisons than in the community. But people get to jail and prison because, you know, they have mental health problems, they have drug problems, they're coming from communities that also have very high prevalence levels, and, you know, they may be going to FQHCs or ERs where you'd see a similar trend. So I'm going to very briefly talk about, although we, the DOH, oversee medical care, we've had a series of vendors, that is people who have come in to provide the care, who provide the doctors and the nurses. And so instead of going into all the details of that, what I'll say is that, you know, we've had in the modern era, which I would say is the last 20 years, we've had 3 vendors, and we've had 3 or 4 different iterations of HIV care. So I would say, don't pay too much attention to the names, but listen to look at the type of testing, and you'll see that this probably reflects clinical settings that you're familiar with, whether it's a hospital, whether it's a clinic out in the community. You know, in the late 80s when Montefiore had the contract, so provided care out there, there was very little HIV testing, as there probably was in most clinic settings at that time. You know, during the span of their time at Rikers, we went from maybe getting 1,000 people tested a year up to 3,500 a year. So keep in mind that we have 13,400 today people in Rikers, but over the year, because it's a jail, because people come in and out, we generally have about 90 or 100,000 admissions a year. So it's a big, you know, it's a lot of turnover. So when you see a number like 1,000, 3,000, 5,000, that's out of 90 to 100,000. So at the bottom there, it mentions another a subsequent contract, which basically continued this kind of like very medically oriented HIV testing, like a doctor would talk to somebody and find that they had a risk factor. The current contractor came in 2001 and did a little bit better, but again, by putting in some HIV counselors, but, you know, maintained a pretty moderate level of testing. Then in 2004, we changed how we do HIV testing so that we went to a universal offer on intake. So when people came into our system, we would say, would you like to have an HIV test? And it was not based on a doctor saying, get an HIV test. So there we really, that's our biggest single jump. We went up to about 25,000 tested. So that's give or take 25% of our population. And that jump is our biggest jump to date. So this is a little bit of the algorithm. I won't go into it because it's a clinical algorithm, but basically this is what we do when we find people who are positive. The one thing I will say is that from a primary care standpoint, a negative is as important to us as a positive, because, you know, what we want in our setting and in cities is for people to know their status. And so that moment where they have that negative test is this incredibly important teachable moment that, while we struggle in jails to take advantage of situations like that because it's a jail and people are going through a horrible experience, we still want to try as best we can to say, okay, you know, we have this initiative that I have a colleague actually here who's going to be reporting tomorrow on it called Take Care New York. And so it has 10 things that are important about your health. And so when we test people and we have a negative, then we say, okay, let's connect with you about these 10 things that are important about your health, which I think is a good primary care approach. I think we struggle in jail because, you know, people care about getting out of jail. So recently we've then created very strict targets that we want all the jails, those 11 jails I mentioned, to meet. So we've gone from that 25,000 number up to about 32,000 last year. The thing is, the more we test, it's not like we're finding, we believe there's this reservoir of people that don't know, or we don't know that they know, we don't know, but we don't find them. So our positivity rates, no matter where we go, we get, you know, we now have some of the highest numbers of HIV testing in the country for a jail, but we're not getting an increased positivity rate. And so that just reflects kind of the overall numbers of people tested. So we then just last year got some money to do this a point of service testing. So we go to the refusers. So anybody who refused on intake, so let's say last year there were 9,000 people, 90,000 people, 28,000 got tested on intake. So we take lists of people who refused HIV testing. We go talk to them with HIV counselors. In doing that, and this is where we use this Take Care New York card, and we talk to them about all their health status. So we have this great acceptance rate. These are refusers, keep in mind. We find them, and over half of them agree to get HIV tested with us. So we feel like that's important. We're doing a lot of good counseling, but the positivity rate is still the same. So this elusive group of people we think are out there, even with this extra effort, we're not finding them. We are finding out a lot about why people refuse, and we're also, you know, having good contact with them about other health areas. I'll just mention very briefly that we've got, we have a lot of resources in the New York City jail system, and so we have two separate programs dedicated to people with HIV and discharge planning. So one program, that top program, is just new positive. So anybody who's newly positive, we have special counselors that are clinically trained that keep an eye on what care they're getting, are the doctors giving them the right meds, hooking them up to care in the community. The second program, transitional healthcare, tracks all the known positives coming in, which is most people, and also connects them to care in the community. and connects care by taking them there, by getting them their medicines, even if they're going to get bailed out or go from court, physically driving them there, checking on them. So it's a really labor-intensive push we have. So briefly, the thing that we don't do a lot of is follow-up testing. So we do, last year we did 32,000 tests. We only did probably 4,000 or 5,000 tests on follow-up. So that is when somebody comes back to the clinic. So that's the setting where I'd really like to expand this, because this connection that providers, doctors, PAs have with patients in front of them, which is what we want in the community, is we want part of that connection with your provider about your asthma, about your heart disease. We want to use that to check in. And so one of the ways we're working on that is we're rolling out an EHR. We're halfway through our jails. So 6 of our 11 jails have this EHR live. And so our chronic care templates that we're building, we're putting in, you know, a section that docs need to fill out and PAs need to fill out saying, I talked to this person about their HIV status, which is not something that we normally do right now. There are some particular disincentives to testing that I won't go into, but they have to do with the correctional setting. You can imagine people worry about, you know, anonymity and the confidentiality of their results. People do not want to be known as HIV positive. They don't want, most people we find that we really talk to don't want to find out they're positive in jail. Some of those disincentives we can work on, but some are difficult. And then finally, this grant that we have to go do this point of service testing to find refusers, we're really trying to roll this out in all the facilities and have this be a standard. So that's just a brief overview of what we're doing, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I want to thank my colleagues at the DOH and Hunter for helping with this talk.
I just have a question. It's fascinating, the idea of the potential refusers or the ones that you think are positive. Have there been any studies outside of a jail population where you kind of have this captive audience, if you will, but do we think that there are similar trends?
Yeah, I think in primary care there's clearly, and this is, you know, part of the reason we started to do this was because there's a thought that in the Bronx or in certain parts of Brooklyn there are these people that, despite these Herculean efforts to get testing out there, and this is true probably all over the country, especially in some urban areas, that those people escape our best efforts. So we've done these focus groups where we sit down and talk to people, and I have a health analyst who just finds the most amazing things out when she sits down with groups of people who refused HIV testing. They talk to her about why they refused. And, you know, there are some people that have very fixed conspiracy theories about us and what we do in jail that make me tremble, because it makes me think, wow, if people really believe this, then we need to basically, like, hit the reset button, because, you know, what we're saying and think people are hearing is different from what people are really believing. But I think that you're correct that there is this reservoir that we in public health and epi think are out there in these communities. And the traditional thought is to try and find them in jail, because a lot, they disproportionately show up in jail. It may be that the flip side of that coin is jail's not a place that anybody wants to find out or get told for the first time that they're HIV positive. And I have to say, I see patients in one of the jails one day a week, and that could be a pretty adaptive response.
Sorry, I have one more question. I'm curious. So, do you think there's any chance that the positivity rate is so high there that some of the people who are refusing testing in the jail actually know that they are positive?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that we have, you know, we probably have, I guess, 100 or so new positives every year. So it's a small group, and we pay a ton of attention to them because we don't want to mess up on initiating care. And when we talk to those people, a good chunk of them, maybe a third, between a third and a half, it's not, you know, the first time they've heard. But even the thing is, even those people who we pay a lot of attention to, you know, if they're in jail and we have like 4 or 5 or 6 encounters with them, which is a lot for us in a month, still we may not get to the point where they really feel like they're going to share a lot with us. But I think you're right that a good chunk of them know.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.